Wake up, San Francisco. Hey, what's up, everyone? I'm Sarah.
I'm Liz.
And this is the It's Fine, I'm Fine podcast.
Everybody, thank you. Go ahead.
No, it's been a while.
It's been a while. So thank you for your patience. We have a really exciting episode today that we are excited about. I don't want to say excited twice, but there I go saying it three times. We'll tell you a little bit more about her, but we are joined today by Dr. Sipra Ladha, who is a perinatal psychiatrist, and she talked to us all about just so many things having to do with mental health as it relates to women conceiving, who have conceived, postpartum depression, postpartum anxiety, mm-hmm. you know, infertility, all of those things. And people have actually been requesting that. Like, I remember people requesting that wow. pre-COVID. Mm-hmm. And I'm so glad that we got to speak with her.
Totally. I totally agree. And yeah, it made me realize that there are a lot of aspects to mental health that I don't really think about. For example, the mental health journey when you're thinking about having children, or the mental health journey after or during. Of course, I've heard of postpartum depression, but there's just so much more to it that I didn't know about. And she really, really taught us a lot. And, you know, if you think that having children is something that you might be interested in your life, this honestly was really informative. And even if you're not interested in having children, like maybe your partner is or whatever it is, like it is really good to know, because maybe you have friends who are having children and you want to support them, but you don't know how because you don't even know that some of these things are real things. I didn't know.
Totally. And once again, the more that we talk about these issues, like genuinely, the more, like, part of our whole episode, the thesis of the episode was how women feel really ashamed, like when they have postpartum depression, because it's billed to be this like most fantastic point in your life, and like your whole life shifts when you have a baby in the best way. And in so many ways, I believe that to still be true, but you know, it creates this level of shame when you struggle with having a child, or like you struggle with your mental health when you have a child, because you don't want to have to admit to people, this isn't like how I thought it was going to be, mm-hmm. you know?
One thing I thought of during the recording actually was like single mothers who oftentimes I feel, well, I don't know their experience, so I can't really speak to it, but I feel like sometimes single mothers have to prove to the world that like they're more than okay and like they're having a great time. And because, you know, everyone, this is the way society is. Like, people question, are they going to be okay by themselves?
Right.
And I think single mothers have to prove themselves and say like, me and my baby are a duo. We're doing just fine. So I was thinking about what single mothers who experience postpartum depression or postpartum OCD, and, you know, just hopefully they find support in friends or other family, because I just can't imagine living by myself and going through some of the experiences that Sipra was speaking to.
Absolutely. And I really love that she talked about how important it is for her to make mental health care for mothers accessible, because mm-hmm. I knew this, but I was recently reminded that the mortality rate in birth for Black women is like some exponentially higher number than it is for white women. And for me, I like, when I hear that statistic, I'm like, that's so horrible. Why? Like, I don't understand. Like, I really don't understand. Is there a medical reason? Is it barriers to care? So I think in every way that we can make mental health and physical primary care health, obviously, a priority for all women or all mm-hmm. people conceiving children or having children, the better we all are. Especially because I think that, I know that now, to being, Sipra told us this, that your mental health obviously so impacts your physical health and the physical right. health of the baby. Like, we talked about how we asked about medication, and she said, when you think about it, like, if you're not treating your mental illness or your mental health struggles while pregnant, like, think about how that impacts the baby.
Wow.
Like, don't think about how, of course, we all want to think about what are we putting into our body. And right. it's so important to question and ask questions about, like, is this medicine okay? But that really made me think more about, like, people are so conscientious about what they put into their body, but they forget that if you're sacrificing your own mental health for your baby, you're actually like doing a grave disservice both to you right. and to the child.
Right.
Wow. So I really thought that was really interesting. So
that is really interesting.
Before we bury the lead. Was that burying the lead? Or is burying the lead when you don't talk about what you're going to talk about or whatever? Before we give it all away.
No, I think that made sense. Before we bury the lead. Yeah. Wrap up the opening statement.
No, I was saying I don't want to give everything away that we speak about before we speak about it.
Oh, well, then I have no idea.
I don't know either. But so before we get into Peak and Pit, we want to remind everyone that this podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp. BetterHelp is not a crisis line. It's not self-help. It is professional therapy done securely online. We actually talked about that a little bit with Sipra and how it's important to speak to counselors, mm-hmm. not just when you're in crisis, but when you want to have those tools to make your mental health better and the way that you deal with challenges better. On BetterHelp, there is a broad range of expertise available, which may not be locally available in many areas. We talked about that as well. The service is available for clients worldwide. You can log into your account anytime and send a message to your therapist. So if you want to get 10% off your first month of service, you can go to BetterHelp.com/itsfine. That's BetterHelp.com/itsfine for 10% off your first month of service. And you can join the over 2 million people who have taken charge of their mental health with the help of an experienced professional. Yeah, we talked a lot about how, like, just hearing the raw numbers of how many psychiatrists there are in the country versus how many people need psychiatrists,
yeah.
especially mothers, there's a big disparity. So yeah. we want to make sure that people, that the help that is available, that people are getting it.
It reminded me of, it's a little bit different because I know, whatever, it's just different, but it reminded me of the time that I like couldn't get a refill of my anxiety medication. So I just had to cut it cold turkey because
I think about that frequently.
Like literally no psychiatrist would take me. Access to care is something we're just like so passionate about because if you don't have it, like that's what makes the world go round is people taking care of their mental health. Like, I just don't understand. So anyway, Sipra's doing an amazing thing. And do you want to go into Peak and Pit?
Yeah. I also wanted to quickly give an anecdote that I was thinking about, and I didn't want to share it in front of her because she's such a brainy and smart lady, and I'm sure it would have been fine. But I was thinking when she was talking about the importance of taking care of your mental health, like while you're pregnant, I thought about Kylie Jenner, obviously. She talked about on the Keeping Up reunion they filmed with Andy Cohen, how she talked about keeping her first pregnancy private and mm-hmm. how much that really, like Kendall said, that really impacted Stormy. And I like totally see that because wow. I'm always thinking about how Stormy, I mean, I only see her on social media, but still she's like such a little like so polite and calm, and Kylie's so calm. So I think whether or not that's true, take it with a grain of salt. It's a good representation of how like making sure you have a good, calm, limited anxiety pregnancy can potentially really positively impact your kid.
Totally.
So with that said, should we do Peak and Pit?
Sure.
You want to go first?
Sure.
Okay.
Okay, so my pit is that I was really sick last week. It was not COVID. It was not COVID. I want to reiterate, it was not COVID. But I was really sick last week, and it was so – I just haven't had like a cold in so long. Once again, it was not COVID. But I just haven't had a cold in a really long time, and like just took the normal course of a cold. But oh my gosh, I was so run down. And like honestly, I probably got it because I was run down, which is ironic because it made me more run down. But sometimes your body just tells you you need a break before you actually take one. And so that's exactly what I did. So I'm very much looking forward to slowing my life down now that the holidays are over, the Jewish holidays are over for now. And just taking a break. I just really need time to chill. So that was very unfortunate. But thank God I'm okay now. And my peak was, honestly, I have a few peaks, but I'll just choose two and I'll make them short. The first one is that there was this holiday this week called Simchas Torah. And basically what that means is you're just supposed to be like your happiest for a whole week. Like it's actually challenging. You're supposed to be full of joy every single day for a week for Sukkot leading up till this holiday, which is called Simchas Torah. But it was honestly just so fun. Like I took off work for it because it was an official holiday and, official holiday, obviously not to America, but to the Jewish people. And I was with my community. There was like so much food. Tuesday night, there must have been like 400 people out in the streets dancing, drinking, eating. Then Wednesday morning, I show up and they had like a full brunch with like beautiful tables set up, and all of my friends showed up hungover, and like we all were like sharing stories from the night before, and you know, there was good food in the morning, and I was with my mans, which is like a surprise. I guess people on this podcast don't know that. But it was just like really exciting and really fun. And it was my first time ever doing this holiday in full. And it was just a really, really, really nice time. That's one peak. And then my other peak is that Liz and Chris, can I talk about this on the podcast? Liz and Chris met, oh my God, I hate the word my boyfriend. I literally,
oh, don't get me started.
I despise it. Guy that I said I'm seeing. Liz and Chris and him and me had dinner last night, and honestly it was really fun. And I always enjoy like combining my worlds, because up until now it's kind of felt like I've lived this private like relationship life that no one else in my life knows about. Mm-hmm. And then suddenly now it feels like I'm integrating the two.
Totally.
And that's always like a really good feeling when it goes well. So that was a peak.
Good.
Me. Yeah.
We loved meeting the man you're seeing. I also hate saying boyfriend. I hate it with all my heart and soul.
Yeah, same.
Hopefully I won't be saying it for that much longer.
Ooh.
No, but I have to say fiance, which like, is that worse? It might be. I just say Chris.
I don't know.
Like, I'm just going to say Chris. Yeah. And people are like, who is that? I'm like, you know, the guy.
Yeah.
That was so extra that I said that, but whatever. I don't care. Also, wow, I have so many thoughts. First of all, I didn't realize until I was an adult and around more observant people how September is just like one long holiday.
It's exhausting.
Very
honestly.
Exhausting. And when you're Jewish and you live in New York, especially Manhattan, like you have a holiday from September to December, because really Christmas, though we don't observe it in any religious capacity, it's like in the air.
Yeah.
And I like just like it's such a fun time of year. You have Halloween, Thanksgiving, like, and then we don't do Christmas, and it's very as far as I know, very low-key Jewish holiday. Like, there's no really Jewish holidays around that time. Yes, Hanukkah, but, like, that's not even close to, like, Simchat Torah and, like, the holidays in September. That's more of, like, an important story, but more of, like, a cultural holiday.
Totally.
So it's really just, like, September to December, just, like, one long celebration, holiday season for me especially. And also, the thing that you said about the cold, I didn't know you had a cold, but Chris said, he was like, everybody's going to get the flu this year, because even if you get the, like, nobody had it last year.
Yeah.
So I don't know, like, I don't know, that's not science, like, no one quote me on that, but he was like, that was a good hypothesis, I think, because yes, 100% COVID's still a risk, but like, can we just talk about how people, I don't think, got a lot of colds and flus over the past 2 years.
Because we weren't with people.
We were not with people. And so when you were with people, like, God forbid, you got COVID or something, but like, we're going to be back in like the cold flu season, and that's not fun. So, you know, definitely consult with your doctor or whatever, but it's flu season. So if you're a person who gets vaccines, you can get your flu vaccine if that's something that you usually do.
Yeah.
Just a reminder, because I didn't realize that that's like a thing you can do now.
Yeah.
Even though it's now today, we're recording, it's October. My pit.
Wait, really quickly before the last thing I wanted to say was that I recently learned that Sukkot and Thanksgiving have really similar vibes.
100%.
Because the pilgrims were really religious people.
Totally.
And they took their inspiration on the like harvesting and everything from Sukkot.
Yes.
Which is like so crazy. I didn't know that.
Yeah. When I think of like harvest, Chris the other day was like, it's so interesting that every like group has like a harvest holiday. And I'm like, that's because of the Jews.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. Yeah.
100%.
Yeah.
I find that so interesting too. Like even when I learn about like reading things like in college and stuff about like the founding fathers and like the things that they would write, they are constantly referencing like, you know, Cain and Abel. And I'm like, oh, those are, I forget that Christian people like are also like, that's part of their story.
Yeah.
Different part of their story, but
totally.
So fascinating.
Yes.
My pit is that I had some, God, how vague can I be? I had some just difficult personal family issues last weekend that were, just like check on your local people from like who have divorced parents. Yeah. So I'm not going to editorialize because it sucks. There's no like getting around it. My peak though was that that forced me to really try and like shift my mindset. And it's corny and I posted about it on Instagram, but I really have been like, I saw it on TikTok. It was like a doctor who said, if you start every day by being like, today's going to be really good. I hate saying that. And it's literally the plot of Dear Evan Hansen, but it has really helped me. Like the past week, I've been doing so much better, and I can only attribute that to the fact that that's directly corresponds to waking up and saying that every day. And so I highly recommend doing that. It won't hurt you to do that. Because it's changed my mood a lot. Also, the weather is like really helping my mood. It's like nice and cool. We've been talking about this day for months.
Yeah, literally for months.
So that's my pit and peak. And without further ado, here's the episode. Enjoy.
Enjoy.
Yourself to us and tell us a little bit about yourself.
My name is Ziprolata. I am a perinatal psychiatrist. I currently practice out of Atlanta, Georgia. I'm originally from India, but I moved here when I was 4 and then was a native New Yorker my whole life, and then came down here to train at Emory for residency and had a bunch of kids and decided to stay because New York City is a hard place to have kids.
Definitely. So the first thing that I want to ask you, because I talked to you a little bit about it on the phone, but we don't know what perinatal psychiatry is. So you'll have to break that down for us. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so perinatal psychiatry is a branch of psychiatry that really deals with women who are either pregnant or postpartum or in the fertility or infertility process. Anyone who is in the process of conceiving or, for some part of that time afterwards, the perinatal period is, and the postpartum period can be anywhere from, right after birth to even 18 months postpartum, and now our kind of more wide definition is 4 years after having a baby.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. And how did you get in? I mean, I know that you went to medical school, but like, how did you end up in this field and why?
Yeah. So I actually went to medical school thinking that I was going to be an OBGYN. I really loved the idea of delivering babies. And then I did my OB rotation and oh my gosh, I have so much respect for OBGYNs. What they do is amazing. And I decided I could not do that, kind of catching babies in the middle of the night all day in times and things like that. But my interest has always been in women's health. And I was just naturally drawn to psychiatry during medical school. I noticed that I was doing a lot of my psychiatric rotations and I was wanting to pick up, extra rotations to get more time in the field. And I think the idea of, studying disease and disease process was always really interesting to me, but kind of the wider experience that people have, their past histories, how that affects how they're doing and feeling now, a lot of their kind of psychological makeup was always what I found very interesting. And so I decided to go into psychiatry. And, the first 2 or 3 years of residency are pretty straightforward. You're kind of learning everything under the sun very quickly, working 80-hour weeks. And the last year, you have the opportunity to specialize a little bit. And I trained under Dr. Toby Goldsmith, who's the head of the Women's Mental Health Clinic at Emory, and had a bunch of other amazing mentors, including Jeff Newport, who does a lot of perinatal psychiatry, and kind of felt like I'd found my home. It was the perfect marriage of working with women, especially working with women around the fertility process and also psychiatry.
Mm-hmm. So you obviously can prescribe medication. So is that part of what you do? Like, do a lot of women require?
So let me just tell you, I guess, a little bit more. And so perinatal psychiatry is, kind of an offshoot of psychiatry. I also do a lot of general psychiatry. Not all the patients I see are pregnant or postpartum. But within psychiatry, a lot of us have the medical training and, understand some of that disease process and are able to prescribe medication and then also do psychotherapy. So I did a 2-year fellowship with the Analytic Institute. And so I really enjoy doing psychodynamic psychotherapy and CBT as well. And so typically with my patients, when they come in, I'll do an evaluation. We'll kind of figure out what might be most helpful, whether that's just psychotherapy in addition to medication, And definitely during that perinatal process, whether the woman is trying to conceive, whether she's already conceived, or whether she's postpartum and may or may not be breastfeeding, there's a lot of additional considerations that we make with medication and how it might affect the baby and how it might affect mom during that period of time, how it's passed into breast milk. And so that's kind of the increased specialization that we think about with perinatal psychiatry.
Got it. One thing I think I've heard so much more about is postpartum depression. Like, I think I remember hearing about it, I don't know, 10 years ago and thinking like, that's so scary, and thinking that it only happens to like less than 1% of women. And now I feel like, I don't know, maybe this is because people talk about it more or what, but I would love to hear like from a medical perspective, like how you've seen the conversation shift around postpartum depression, just because the way I see it as like a normal person who hasn't, I've never conceived, like how that has become more like talked about, and also
diagnosed. A lot more attention that's being given to postpartum depression, postpartum anxiety, postpartum psychosis. There's a ton of things that can happen during the postpartum period. And I think even as, you know, late as 10 years ago, there weren't a lot of conversations, and there's just starting to be more conversation around maternal mental health. I think in the medical world, especially around pregnancy and postpartum, if there's a healthy baby, then kind of it's all good. Let's all move on. You know, the baby's delivered, mom's here, everyone's alive. Let's kind of move into the next phase. And there wasn't necessarily a lot of attention to what is that journey actually like? What is mom actually feeling like? You know, how is she bonding with the baby? How is all of that time after delivery going? And so we now finally kind of have this concept of the fourth trimester, so the first 3 months after delivery, and, you know, understand it as a unique period of time that is needs to be paid attention to, that is an extremely vulnerable time for both mom and baby. And so, you know, in terms of postpartum depression and postpartum anxiety, postpartum OCD, postpartum psychosis, we finally now are at least screening for it regularly. So typically, 6 weeks after delivery, either the pediatrician or the OBGYN will do what's called the Edinburgh scale, and we'll ask some questions, and that will maybe tell us who might be having some symptoms or might be struggling a little bit. Then that person would be referred for counseling and therapy, and then if needed, for medication. And, you know, it's interesting. I think that it is much more discussed and spoken, but to my eye, not nearly enough. You know, we're not nearly having enough conversations. I think that we still kind of, the media portrayal of what it must look like to be a mom and what it must feel like to get pregnant and what pregnancy must look like and, you know, how amazing it is to have a baby is still, I think, very much what's perceived, what's thought of when you think about that time period. And with social media, when you see your friends and, you know, their cute pictures with their babies and their perfect little tutus and all of that, there's this idea of motherhood. And I think it's way more than 1% of people who deal with it. The statistics are actually 1 in 5 to 1 in 8 women will experience some kind of peripartum disorder. And aside from kind of checking in 6 to 8 weeks after the baby is born, we're not otherwise screening for it. We're not otherwise talking about it. And a lot of the experience that I've had is with women who have come into my office saying, you know, I don't know what's wrong with me. This is how I've been feeling, and I feel like I should just be the happiest person. I have this healthy baby in front of me, but I'm feeling super anxious. I can't go to sleep. I'm having intrusive thoughts. I don't feel connected to the baby. I feel like I regret all of this. You know, I wish I'd never had a baby. Just all of these things that, you know, to them are really socially unacceptable to say. And we need to start normalizing that this is a lot of what that postpartum period looks like, and that it's okay to get help for it. I think that's the other part. A lot of people will kind of come in and think that they can just white knuckle their way through it, that like it'll get better, they'll somehow figure it out. But postpartum depression, postpartum anxiety absolutely warrants further attention, and it is really treatable. So I think the more conversations that we're having around it, the more people will access care and kind of even acknowledge their own feelings around this and get some help.
Yeah, wow. That's actually really informative. I didn't know any of this. I knew that postpartum depression, I've heard of postpartum depression. I don't think I even really realized that there was postpartum anxiety or OCD. Would you say that it comes like naturally to some women to experience that? Or are there certain like things that you can do, not to avoid it.
So I'll tell you a little bit about my thought process about that. So anytime a woman has had a history of anxiety or depression, they are at significantly more likely risk to develop a postpartum mood disorder, right? So if there's already... if there's already any kind of personal history, you know, that's something that we want to be really proactive about and be kind of getting into treatment proactively to help catch anything that might happen and to be able to address it right away. The other thing that I think about is if there's any kind of family history. So often, you know, mom will have had postpartum depression and some aunt will have had something that no one really knows exactly what it was. And the woman will be fine. And then in the postpartum period, or as soon as she gets pregnant, she starts to have symptoms for the first time in her life. So that's another really big thing to think about. If there's any kind of genetic vulnerability there, that's something to be, thinking about maybe getting preventative care, just getting yourself into therapy or getting yourself to someone who might be able to kind of help you along the process. But that's one thing, which is just getting into care earlier. And then in terms of prevention, there is actually a lot that we can do to prevent sometimes not just symptoms from showing up, but from it being really bad. And one of those things is sleep. So sleep and, you know, new motherhood is kind of an oxymoron, right? There's a baby that's waking up potentially all night long having needs. But what the studies show is really that getting 5 consolidated hours of sleep is preventative for worsening depression and anxiety. I like to think about sleep as like the building blocks upon which all mood and anxiety is built. And so if that sleep is really crumbling, I mean, it's really hard to build good mental health from there. And that can feel really difficult, right, to get 5 hours of consolidated sleep during that period. But it just requires a lot of planning, whether there's a partner who can, you know, take shifts to feed the baby at 7 o'clock, you go to sleep, someone else feeds at 11, you wake up at 1 to feed. You know, there's definitely structures that can be put into place to help stave off symptoms of depression and anxiety that might emerge, or to help at least lower the risk. And so sleep is kind of the number one thing. The other thing that I always think about is support system. So especially in our really individualistic society that we live in today, right, where there's an idea of a village, but that village is not really right at your doorstep. Getting support can be really, really helpful. And that's very explicit support, not just kind of like, call me if you need me, you know, I'm here, or text me if you need anything, but really putting a plan into place by the third trimester where, you know, for the first week, I'm going to have this support. I'm going to have this person, you know, in my house helping me. I'm going to have this person just holding the baby so I can take a nap. I'm going to have this person helping me with laundry. This is what meals are going to look like. Getting those supports in place ahead of time can be really, really helpful in at least staving off some of the stress that, you know, can be a real trigger for the anxiety and depression.
I know I didn't ask you this in the email, so you can feel free to like take time to think about it. But I'm really curious, like why, like scientifically, postpartum happens. Like I don't really understand why women who just give birth are more like why they're more susceptible to these feelings. Like I just want to know that.
There's really, so is there like a chemical things that contribute to it. It's really interesting just from an intellectual perspective. And it's not just postpartum, it's during the pregnancy as well, which is that if you think about it, we're kind of evolutionarily and biologically trained to feel more anxious when we are either pregnant or we have a new vulnerable infant that we're taking care of, and we're vulnerable ourselves because we've just given birth and we're healing from that process, right? If you think back to like the cave days, the moms that are more anxious, right, are going to stay awake all night, watch their babies, make sure no bears come and get them. And those are the babies that are going to survive and then give birth to more babies. And so anxiety during the perinatal period is actually like a very biologically adaptive trait. It's something that's been selected for over millions and millions of years. And, you know, even in my own pregnancy, that when I was pregnant with my third child, my second pregnancy, because I had twins first, one of the first ways that I knew that I was pregnant is my husband dropped a book on the floor and I jumped up. And I'm not usually, you know, squirrelish. I don't typically react that way, but my whole body just tensed, that idea that like there was a loud noise and it could be a threat. And I didn't even know I was pregnant at that point. My body was already preparing for, you know, there's this big vulnerable thing that's going to happen. You need to be on high alert. So that's kind of the bigger picture, the biology and the evolution. And then in terms of the other things, you know, we talked about sleep being disrupted. There are so many shifts that are going on hormonally with estrogen and progesterone. There are sleep shifts that are happening even on the neurotransmitter level. And then birth is a big process, whether it's a C-section or it's a vaginal birth. If you think about the amount of inflammation and the amount of blood that's lost, and then, you know, the healing that needs to happen. And we know that anxiety and depression are so linked to inflammation. You know, we're starting to find out more and more about that, that there's, it's a huge event that the body is going through in terms of the physicality, the neurotransmitters, the architecture, you know, of the day, the stressors. And then, you know, I think that along with sometimes the genetic vulnerability and this evolutionary piece kind of puts together for a lot of women a perfect storm.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Would you say that your journey in your own motherhood, like, impacted your career and your job, like the way that you
speak
to women or understand
them? I
sometimes
kind of like wince when I think about some of my work in that women's mental health clinic at Emory, which was prior to having children at all. And I had, you know, a very intellectual understanding of psychiatry and of mental health, and, you know, had, I think, a much more rigid way I thought about disorders and I thought about medication and treatment and prescription. And then I became unexpectedly pregnant with twins my last year of residency. And, you know, I think it was really enlightening. Wow. Seeing things from the other side as a patient. They were high risk. They were sharing a placenta. And so in addition to medical training, where I was, you know, running around and taking call and things like that, I was growing two humans and going to the maternal fetal medicine specialist every week, sometimes twice a week. And I just remember like thinking and looking around and being like, no one is asking me about my mental health. And I knew just from that book knowledge that women who are having a twin or a higher order multiple gestation, so twins, triplets, things like that, they're four times the risk than the general population for developing a perinatal mood disorder. And so I kind of kept on thinking like, I wonder if someone's going to ask, I wonder if someone's going to screen, I wonder if, you know, there's going to be resources along the way. And I had never experienced anxiety before I had my own pregnancy that was high risk. And it kept on feeling like, well, this is pretty normal. You know, I'm carrying a high risk pregnancy. I'm working a lot. There's a lot of things to be worried about. This must be normal, right? It must be normal to just be worried. Maybe this is what being a mom is. And then as I went on, I realized like, no, we can, you know, there's momhood that doesn't include feeling anxious and feeling worried constantly and things like that. And so I think that a lot of the, sorry,
I don't even know
what was that?
You said there's momhood without anxiety and worrying. And I said, I don't even know what life looks like.
No, I think in terms of my own work, it's really shed a light to what's practical, what's not practical. And I think when patients, when women come in and it's the first time that they're talking about their anxiety or their depression during pregnancy or afterwards, and they're feeling so alone and isolated, I think, you know, that empathy that I have kind of goes straight out to them. And also our ability to come up with solutions together, whether that's around breastfeeding and sleep and, you know, what medication could look like and the worries around that, I just feel much more tuned into that than I think I did prior to having my own.
Yeah.
Go ahead. No, I was going to just say that's really amazing, because I feel that sometimes people don't even want to go to therapy because they might feel like their psychiatrist or their therapist is coming at them from like a textbook point of view and not like a, and that's kind of why we started this podcast, is because we're not experts, but we experience mental health struggles. And so the goal is that people would feel comfortable listening to our podcast because we're experiencing it.
Right. I was going to ask, this is a whole other area, but I know that like when my mom talked to me about getting pregnant with me and my sister, how she was like, I knew I had to go off my antidepressants. Like she had been on antidepressants and she knew like when you get pregnant. And so obviously this is like there's so much research, so many opinions, but I'd love to know like if you can kind of distill where science is at with like taking medication both when you're pregnant
so
and if you're
breastfeeding. Good news is that we've come a long way. The idea that, you know, because someone is trying to conceive that they need to get off of all their antidepressants is really outdated. And a lot of people are still hearing this from their providers. which is really not the current recommendation. So, you know, we have done a lot of research and we know that untreated depression and anxiety during pregnancy and in the postpartum period actually has like significant harms, right? That those babies are sometimes born premature. There's often lower birth weight. You know, there's a ton of things that can come from not treating your anxiety and depression well during pregnancy. And I always bring this up with women when they're like, oh, I just don't want to take anything that's going to hurt my baby. And it's like, well, not treating this is going to hurt your baby. We know that for sure. So let's then talk about, you know, what are the things that we need to do in order to address what's going on. And so there are, you know, medications such as Zoloft that are considered very safe in pregnancy and in breastfeeding. There's very low transfer into breast milk and, you know, can be safely used during pregnancy. And a lot of physicians and other providers just don't have a lot of comfort with medication during pregnancy. And that's why they will either kind of look up the information themselves and maybe get an outside opinion or send someone to a perinatal psychiatrist so that that can kind of be taken care of. You know, and we can sit with the mom or the woman and go over risks and benefits. And if they're not already on Zoloft and potentially they're on another medication, kind of talk about what are the risks with this medication, how likely it is that we're going to encounter one of those risks, how do we monitor if you're already on a medicine, if the baby's already been exposed to that medication, you know, when is it smart to change? When is it smart to go down? When is it smart to go up? I think a common misconception is like, okay, I'm about to get pregnant, I need to get off of everything. Or women who are taking medication during pregnancy are like, okay, I'm about to give birth, let me go down on my medicine. And we actually really like to stay the same on medicine or even go up just because that risk in that postpartum period is so incredibly high. So in some ways, we've come a really long way. The edict is really to treat aggressively anxiety and depression in the perinatal period. I don't know that everyone's really caught on yet, but we're working on it.
I have a couple questions about that. So when you say treat anxiety and depression, obviously medicine is one form of that, but like, would talk therapy be another form of that?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think that psychotherapy is definitely a great form of treatment. And for a lot of women, it is exactly what they need. And by, you know, being able to reframe their thoughts and recognize their thoughts and understand their automatic thoughts and kind of get in that space, that can be incredibly helpful and can cause like a significant reduction in the anxiety or in the depression that they're experiencing. And if that does it, that's great. That's wonderful. You know, we always start with psychotherapy. But if someone has already been on medication or they are doing therapy and they're getting a reduction, but it's not a full treatment and they're still experiencing a lot of symptoms, that's when we would think about either continuing their medication or potentially starting medicine.
Got it. Yeah. And then my other question, this is really detailed that I don't even know if like, whatever, I'll just ask it. You said Zoloft has a very low transference to the baby. Mm-hmm. To breast milk. Okay. So again, this is like super detailed, but like, would a baby ever become reliant?
No, that's a good question.
Like, I don't know if that's,
you know, looked at babies and they looked at children of moms who were taking SSRIs, specifically Zoloft, either while they were pregnant or postpartum. And the first thing to remember is SSRIs are not addictive. And so babies don't become addicted to them. Sometimes there can be a transition in the neonatal period where after the baby is born, they might be a little bit more jittery and there's things that we kind of look out for. But no, babies typically don't experience issues because mom is taking Zoloft. And the other thing that we hear a lot is, well, my baby's going to have autism if I take an SSRI. I don't really know how that got started, but it did. And a lot of people worry about that. And that has been shown time and time to be just not true.
It's really interesting.
Yeah.
I want to talk to you a bit about like your practice and the center that you started, but before, do you work at all with, or do people in your practice work at all with people who are struggling
Absolutely.
With infertility, yeah. like way before they
I'm
even
really
get to
I'm really glad that you asked that
phase?
Because I was going to say that's kind of the part of the, that we're not talking about. And so, you know, for a lot of people, getting pregnant can be quite the journey. And a lot of people aren't expecting that it's going to be quite the journey. There's so many things that can happen, you know, in the interim, and even the infertility workup process, going through cycles, whether that's IUI or IVF, and all of the complication that that includes can be incredibly, incredibly difficult. And so, you know, that's another place where we see a lot of people come in for treatment and come in for help. It's kind of this idea of having a baby is really exciting, but when it doesn't come easily and there's a lot of roadblocks, it can cause a lot of anxiety, it can cause a lot of depression, it can cause a lot of problems with self-esteem and self-worth and jealousy and envy and all sorts of things that can be triggered because of difficulty in the process. And you know, even with infertility, there's other things to think about too. It, you know, potentially a woman gets pregnant and has a miscarriage. And what does it look like when she has a miscarriage? How is that really dealt with? Because right now we just kind of hope that people get over it and feel better and move on. And you know, if they don't get over it and feel better and move on, then sometimes they make themselves their way over to me or to a therapist. But a lot of time they're just dealing with the aftermaths of that. And that often has effects on future pregnancies in terms of how they feel about it. You know, the anxiety that is caused getting pregnant again after having a previous miscarriage, after kind of passing that threshold or that week at which they might have miscarried in the past. That, you know, there's a ton of work that needs to be done there. And then also the idea that kind of thinking about the birthing process and once the baby is here, and what that journey looked like, even what the delivery looked like, is really important. That's, you know, often really overlooked when it's just healthy baby, mom's healthy, baby's healthy, let's all move on. But that birthing process can be really traumatic for a lot of people. They can experience, you know, loss of control. There can be complications. There can be a ton of things that happen in the interim where people have PTSD symptoms, PTSD-like symptoms for a long time afterwards. And that can have kind of reverberating effects. But these are conversations, I think, that are just starting to happen.
Yeah.
I have to admit, I really haven't put this much thought into like, that's kind of embarrassing as a woman, because I feel like I should know more, and B, like, I hope to have children one day. So it's actually pretty crazy now that you're speaking to us that how little I actually know about what could happen. Like, you really just do assume, okay, the woman has a baby, it's going to be hard. And then like, they're so happy that they have a baby that they're just fine. And they wake up and like, everything's fine. And some people experience postpartum, yeah, but like, then it's over. I actually wonder, when it comes to postpartum depression, like, if it's untreated, could it continue to linger?
Absolutely.
On? Or does it,
and
just,
I think
like,
that that's one of
away?
The biggest misconceptions, which is just knuckle through it and you're going to be okay. It's going to be okay. You know, the evidence is that untreated postpartum depression or postpartum anxiety can have really long, extended, reaching effects. You know, that's the time where you're building a bond with the baby. And if you're feeling really anxious or you're feeling really depressed, that affects the bond. And that bond is like the building blocks, right, for the rest of parenthood. But also just for untreated anxiety and depression, it can go on for 18 months. It can really go on for longer if it's not treated and treated well. So yeah, definitely not something to be ignored. For a lot of people, it does get better. For a lot of people, it doesn't get better with, you know, without intervention. And so it's definitely something that if it's going on, you know, to be talking to a professional about and to be getting help through. And then there's also kind of more severe things that can happen. We are just talking about postpartum depression and anxiety. Postpartum OCD is kind of an offshoot of postpartum depression that can be really scary, especially in the postpartum period. You know, some women will have really intrusive thoughts of banging their baby's head into the wall, or, you know, dropping their baby, or doing something really horrible to their baby. And I mean, can you imagine how awful to have those thoughts and to think, I want to be a good mom, and I'm having these really crazy thoughts that are intrusive, they're affecting my time with the baby. I can't even go into the room or be alone with the baby because I'm so worried I might do something. That's a hard thing even to admit to yourself or potentially your partner, let alone to like go in and talk to someone about. And I think that there's a lot of fear that my baby's going to get taken away, or they're going to think, you know, A, B, and C. But I think the biggest message around that is it's treatable. It's really common. Postpartum OCD, I kind of think of as like postpartum anxiety on steroids, but totally treatable, totally addressable. And then there's also postpartum psychosis, which is when there's really a disconnect or a break with reality. And that often is triggered by that lack of sleep, the change in hormones. And then there can be, you know, hallucinations, there can be paranoia and a whole bunch of other things. And that is what we consider a psychiatric emergency where they need to get to a hospital.
Yeah. It sounds like the, I mean, I'm not a statistician, but like, it sounds like the biggest barrier to healing with postpartum disorders or issues yes. is that going to the doctor or like going to talk to someone, because you're like, what you're saying to me is like, all of this is very treatable, which makes sense to me, because when you talk to a psychiatrist about like psychosis or these things, they're so scary, like so scary, these intrusive thoughts. But there's so much, like there's like people take medication for OCD generally.
And I see it in my office every day. So, I mean, I think that people always ask me like, oh, is your job hard? And like, you know, do you struggle with it? And my job is hard. I also feel incredibly blessed to be able to do my job. I think it's such a privilege. And what I see every day is resilience. You know, I see people who are coming in and dealing with a lot of really difficult things, whether it's things that life has thrown at them or their brains have thrown at them. But I see people get better every single day. And I think medications can be really magical for a lot of people, totally life-changing. So it's pretty amazing. And it's a privilege to get to see that improvement.
Absolutely. Yeah. Can you talk to us a bit about Thriving Lane and like what you're doing?
So I started Thriving Lane just about 7 months ago. And you know, I right after residency, I opened up my own perinatal practice. It's a solo private practice here in Atlanta, and it's done really well. I never, you know, spent a dollar actually on marketing aside from printing up business cards. It just got really full. There's a lot of people that needed treatment, and I've always been really busy and I've really enjoyed that. I've also done a lot of telemedicine work at the VA. I work with veterans at the Veteran Administration and have really enjoyed kind of that combination of work. Also during that time, not only did I have my twins during residency, but then I had a now 4-year-old, another boy, 3 boys, and then I had a 2-year-old girl. So I was busy having children, being a mom myself. But, you know, we kind of got to a point where earlier this year, I and my co-founder, Dr. Rathi, who's a child and adolescent psychiatrist, who also does a lot of perinatal work and a lot of, you know, infant psychiatry and that early bond between mother and child, got to a point where we're like, this is ridiculous. You know, only really the top 1% of people can afford specialized care. And people, women do need specialized care. These things need to be addressed and they need to be talked about. And then there needs to be resources. There's a lot of learned helplessness in medicine when it comes to psychiatry, especially around perinatal disorders, which is there are no resources. So let's not ask about it, because what are we going to do when we know that there's a problem? Nothing, where we don't have the ability to do anything. And so we, you know, kind of put our heads together and just decided we have the skill set, we have this knowledge base. There's maybe 30,000 psychiatrists for the millions and millions of people that we have in the United States. Out of that, there's maybe 4,000 or 5,000 psychiatrists who are perinatal psychiatrists or feel comfortable treating during the perinatal period. And that's just not nearly enough. And so we decided we were going to put together what we call task forces in every state. And we started in Florida and we're going to Georgia and Alaska and other places where we have a group of psychiatrists, prescribers, whether that's NPs or PAs, and therapists who are all trained in women's mental health. And that includes not just perinatal psychiatry, but, you know, perimenopausal mood disorders, infertility and mood, PMDD and mood, just a whole bunch of things that are uniquely female that really need further attention and, you know, have gotten our people trained and they're up and seeing patients and we're able to see everyone through telemedicine to decrease further barriers to care. We're getting paneled on insurance companies to decrease barriers to care. So, you know, our mission is really twofold. One is to increase awareness and education in the space and to decrease barriers to care. And then kind of the moonshot vision is to really change the paradigm from crisis care, which is how behavioral health is done these days. You know, someone has dysfunction, gets a referral, but has more dysfunction, is on a waiting list, has dysfunction. And then finally, when they end up at someone's office, you know, they've had months and months and months of difficulty, to a preventative care model, which is actually that we can predict pretty well who's going to have trouble, you know, between that genetic vulnerability and other factors. those people should be having a primary care therapist, kind of like we go to our primary care doctors. They should have someone that they can already check in with once a year. And then if things start to get a little squirrely, or, you know, things aren't going so well, they already are hooked into care and they can get it right away. And then if they need specialized care, whether that's perinatal psychiatry or something else, they can get that. But I think we really need to start thinking of mental health as not just something that people do when they're really struggling and it's kind of like the end option and the end solution, but part of the preventative care model. So that's what we're doing here at Thriving Lane.
Wow. That's awesome. I honestly, we've been doing this podcast for
2 years.
2 years, and I've never thought
therapist.
Of
yeah.
like a primary care therapist. Like, that's so, like, it really is so important to get like checkup. Like, yeah. we get checkups, or yeah. we got checkups when we were kids. And yes, a lot of primary care, like especially pediatricians, I think do a good job now mm-hmm. of like trying to assess for any like difficulty with children, at least, and their mental health. But that's so like, I just never even thought of that.
Me neither. And like, I speak to a therapist weekly, but she's not a psychiatrist. And it is interesting how, you know, if, you know, as I mentioned, I would like to have children. So I've never even put thought into like the process of checking yeah. on my mental health with a doctor mm-hmm. before I want to have children. Like, you only think, not you, but I've only really mm-hmm. thought of like the physical, can I have children? What does my health look like physically? But like, I don't think it's
yeah.
very common to think about where's your mental health when you're
absolutely.
Even
and
talking
I actually
about
see a lot of women for prenatal consults, and they've usually had a family member who's had some things come up, and so they'll come in and do kind of a prenatal consult to take a look at everything, you know, the symptoms that they're having or symptoms they've had in the past, if they're on medicine, their family history, all those sorts of things. And so then we can proactively come up with a plan and say, okay, when are you planning on conceiving, you know, in the next whatever number of months, this is what we would do, this is what it would look like. And they can kind of go into it with a plan, which honestly helps people feel a lot better rather than finding themselves in the middle of something and then, you know, trying to find solutions. So that's definitely something that is available, but I, you know, is like you said, not really thought of.
Mm-hmm.
Are there issues that you see, like, are there a lot of issues you see cropping up with your patients that like you feel like me or Sarah or like the general public would just
yeah,
have no
so
idea
I think
about?
That, just kind of thinking about the time during pregnancy, especially everyone talks about postpartum. But during pregnancy is often where the symptoms start. It is very, very uncommon actually for a woman just to develop symptoms in the postpartum period. Typically, if we're really doing like a careful history, we can trace it all the way back to maybe 20 weeks during pregnancy and things like that. And so, you know, in terms of things to think about is I don't think women often think about attending to their mental health during pregnancy as a priority. They definitely think about attending to their physical health. You know, they go to their OB appointments, they make sure they're taking their prenatal vitamins, they do their anatomy scans, their glucose tests, all those sorts of things. But I think preventatively getting into therapy around pregnancy is an amazing idea. And a lot of people should consider it if they have, you know, the resources.
Well, I think a large part of our demographic of people who listen to this mm-hmm. podcast happens to be women. Would you yeah. agree with that?
And women who are probably around the age where they, if they're planning on having children, that they're like around that.
Right.
Time.
So I think this is really, really helpful. And I hope that some of our listeners either learn something new or maybe will look into it themselves based on what you're telling us. I mean, I know that me, myself, I've already learned a lot more about what
yeah.
I need to look out
yeah,
for.
Yeah, no, I'm
for
glad
when
that,
the time comes.
You know, I think education and awareness is really power. And the more people that are thinking about these things, hearing about them, you know, it kind of decreases that time in between something happening and when they can access support and help. And that's really important. Yeah.
That's great. Could you, before we let you go, could you let us know if we have listeners who want support, who want like psychiatric help or to speak to a counselor, can
yeah.
you direct them to how they can find you and your practice?
Absolutely. So if people are looking for resources, even just to read a little bit more about some of these things, they can go to thrivinglane.com. That's just thriving, lane.com, or they can call our number. It's 347-830-7720. The other place that they can go to look at resources regarding perinatal psychiatry is Postpartum Support International, which is a nonprofit. It has a lot of information on the perinatal period, mood disorders that can come up, as well as contacts in each state. For coordinators and support people who you can contact if you or someone you know is having some trouble. Yeah.
Awesome.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much. This was really, really informative and amazing. Thank you.
Thank you.
I was going to say, I appreciate you guys taking the time to talk with me today.
Of course.
Of course. It was our pleasure, and we will keep you posted on any logistics, but our episode should be out Tuesday, if all things go as we plan them to.
Okay, that sounds great. Yeah. And you guys are doing important work, so it's awesome.
Thank you. Thanks so much.
Okay, bye now.
All right,
bye. Take care. Have a good weekend.
So that was our episode with Sipra. Hope you enjoyed it. Hope you learned something new.
Yeah, we hope you learned something new. She provided you all with resources that you can go to, so we'll be sure to include those in the episode notes. You can follow me on Instagram at Liz Height, on TikTok at Liz Height. You can follow the podcast on Instagram at It's Fine I'm Fine Pod. And where can people find you, Sarah?
You can follow me on Instagram at Sarah L. Sassone. You could follow me on TikTok. I don't post anymore, but there are archives.
There are archives. Some good old content.
Yep.
We hope everyone has a lovely 2 weeks before we talk to you next time, and enjoy the fall. Hope everyone's staying happy and healthy. And yeah.
And with that, it's fine. I'm fine.
It's fine. I'm fine.
Bye.